You're listening to Face Off, episode 94, recorded November 8th, 2010. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about lots of different stuff, primarily web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. Oh, Mark, I'm beat. I think you are too.
Yeah, we were up late working on AgileTask, our web app that me, you, and our friend Rob is working on. Yeah. And we just released a new version, major version, milestone, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And it feels good. You know, we got it out. We were up late, though, you know, so we're kind of beat, kind of tired. And we didn't prepare the show ahead of time, so we're doing it again on Monday night.
Yeah.
Little tired here, and we just messed up a recording too. But
and we had busy days at work. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. Web. Let's talk about this. Entrepreneurship is hard. I think a lot of people don't realize that, but you know, doing Face Off isn't something that you know we get paid to do. It's not part of our job or anything. We do it just because we like to do it, and it's fun. Sometimes we look at things, you know, we're like, oh man, I wish I could go to bed right now, but I gotta do Face Off. But, you know, in general, you know, it's entrepreneurship is hard. And I think sort of Gary Vee hits it on the head when he talks about, you know, people always say, oh, I can't do this and have a job and have a wife. And his answer is, you know, you gotta hustle. It's hard. If you don't want to work for someone else, you want to be your own boss, you gotta work hard. And so get ready to work nights and be tired, and in the end, you feel better for it, like we do. I mean, I feel great. I was so glad to get that new version out. We deployed it, and there was a couple errors and stuff that we didn't see and didn't foresee. So we had to rush and do it, and we were up late. But you know, it feels good and it's hard. But in the end, you're a better person for it, I think.
All right.
So check out our new features. The new feature is a public profile. You can go to agiletask.me/user/JadeRobbins. You can see my profile. You can see like my achievements and some stats about my usage of the app and stuff. So if you don't have AgileTask now, go sign up, check it out, and share your public profile with your friends and see who can get the most achievements, because I don't want to brag or anything, but I'm pretty awesome.
It takes me on average 8.9 days to complete a task. And my most productive day of the week is Monday.
Yeah. Mine is Tuesday.
So we added Tuesday.
Rob is the most productive out of all of us. He has the most completed tasks. He's good about putting everything he does in and checking it off when he's done. So darn him. But check it out. AgileTask.me is one of the sponsors of the show. I say sponsor and use the term lightly because really it's Mark and I are two developers on the app. So check it out. Let us know. Check out our other sponsor, rocketship.it, which the address is actually wrong in our promo, so that's my bad. But check it out if you want to do shipping integration for your apps. You get a double dose of ads on Face Off Show tonight because we're tired and really, you know, let's just find some more ads. I'm going to go surf the internet. No, let's get to the show. Let's get some stuff done. Let's go on to our geek tool of the week. So I think it was our Christmas episode. We talked about this. One of the things we recommended people purchase, if you're interested, is a Keurig single serving coffee maker. So it's been a really warm winter here in Montana. I don't know about where else, you know, elsewhere in the United States or anything, but it's been really warm November. And today the clouds broke and the snow fell, and it's cold and snowy up here in the north. And I love it. One of the reasons I love it is when it gets cold out, it's one of your favorite things to do is break out a delicious cup of hot chocolate.
Yeah, I actually made some hot chocolate before the show because I knew we were going to talk about the Keurig Green Mountain hot cocoa cups. The Keurig, like you had already mentioned, has the one... you don't have to brew a huge pot of hot chocolate or coffee. Right. And the worst thing is like trying to like brew hot cocoa in like a coffee maker. That just wouldn't make sense. It would taste like terrible.
Or I mean, what do you do now? You put a cup, either you put a kettle on the stove and it has to come to a boil, which takes forever.
Right.
Or you put the cup in the microwave and you never know how hot it is, or you put the hot cocoa in and it makes a mess. But, the Keurig takes care of that for you because they actually make K-cups that have hot chocolate in them for you. So you put the hot chocolate in your Keurig and then you put cold water in the top and push the button and it brews, quote unquote, a nice hot cup of hot chocolate for you on these cold winter nights.
Excellent.
I think everyone could use a cup of hot chocolate on cold winter nights. I know my wife loves it. I like it even. I'm a coffee guy. I love coffee, but there's something about when you're sitting by a window watching the snow fall outside, getting a nice hot cup of cocoa, nice little marshmallows in it and everything. So it's worth it. Check it out, the Keurig Green Mountain Hot Cocoa K-Cups 24-pack on Amazon if you have a Keurig coffee maker, which I highly recommend you do. Let's get into our let's move on, actually, to our web apps. The first web app that we want to talk about is called the Tools Geek. You can get to it by going to toolsgeek.com. This is just a really simple site done by How-To Geek that has some like little text tools, some handy little tools that I think most web developers will agree with.
So what kind of tools we got here?
Well, the first one is they call it the text tool, and it's really interesting because it's just a big text box that you put text in, but it has some controls at the top to do some really easy, quick conversions and handy little things for you, too. So, like, I can put in HTML and click it, and it'll just strip all the HTML for me, just give me my straight text. You know, that's really nice instead of having to write a regex to do it for you or anything. You know, just come in here, copy and paste it. Another one is you can paste in HTML, and it'll give you a wiki syntax. Which is really nice. You know, like sometimes you have something in a web page and you're trying to convert to a wiki or something. That's really easy for this to do.
You can clean Word HTML, nasty looking stuff.
That nasty, it's dirty, isn't it, too? That Word HTML. Like, I know so many people, well, a lot of people do this. They're used to using Word. They see that they can save Word as HTML, so they're super pumped about it. It makes the gnarliest HTML, the ugliest markup you've ever seen. Paste it in here, click this, it'll get rid of all of it for you, which is really nice. You can turn text style into HTML. You can uppercase it, lowercase it, get a word count, have it paste line numbers in front of it. You know, just simple, really easy, cool stuff. Another tool that they have there is the upside down text generator. You see this on forums and stuff a lot, especially the goofy ones like Reddit. I think that's the Reddit alien that they have on there upside down. As you input text in, and apparently there's a lot of there's like Unicode or UTF or whatever. There's a lot of characters that are basically upside down versions of English characters. And this basically takes whatever you did and converts it to those for you so you can go paste upside down text somewhere on forums and be like the really cool guy that everyone envies and do all kinds of fun stuff.
So we tested this, we put it in a console in IRC and then sent it in Gtalk, and it seems like it works pretty much anywhere that supports Unicode.
Yeah, I think it's Unicode. It's crazy, these silly people with their goofy forum stuff.
Maybe we should try tweeting out some upside down characters.
Maybe. Maybe we'll tweet this episode upside down.
The other cool tool they have is a password tool. You can generate random passwords for free. You can specify the length of the password and the characters. There's a limited set. You know, you could say you want numbers and letters. You could say I want only lowercase.
This is super handy as a system administrator. I do this all the time where I make an account for someone, and basically like in Linux, what I do is I make the account, I set the password, and then I set it to expire so they have to change it when they log in. But it's always nice to have a quick, easy, random, you know, full heavy-duty password. And so a tool like this, just generate one really quick and super easy, is nice, and I enjoy it. Because, I mean, any of these passwords you generate, especially if you have all three checkboxes for, like, the lowercase, uppercase, and symbols, will be strong on any little password bar, no matter where it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although I do prefer using just numbers for, you know, people that forgot their passwords or things like that, that they're going to reset anyways. Just because numbers are really easy to transcribe on paper, it That's doesn't true. Look like a one doesn't look like an L, or in lower and uppercase, you don't have to deal with that.
Well, it still does, but if you tell them that they're numbers, they know that it's not an L, and it's not, you know. I'm just saying, you just sound like that, you know, making insecure passwords when you reset for people. I cannot support you in that.
Well, it's better than just saying, "Well, your password's password." Now go change.
Yeah, exactly. Your password's puppy. Anyways, check that out by going to toolsgeek.com, brought to you by the How To Geek. So really cool. I like it. Simple, fun, and easy. The next web app we want to talk about, I'm very excited about. I think it's a really good idea. It is called SimilarSiteSearch.com. So traditional search engines, Google, Bing, whatever you're using, are keyword searches. So I search for recipes, or I search for, you know, a personal backlog tool. And those, you know, keywords, it gives me results based on that. But a lot of times you know a site that you have already. So, I'm going to do SeriousEats.com, which is like a food blog I really like. And so what I can do is put that address in here. And what it does is it gives me similar websites. So it's almost categorized, almost tagged, rather than just doing keyword searches. So if I went to Google and searched for Serious Eats, I would get all kinds of things about serious eating. But that doesn't really mean that it's the same type of site that Serious Eats is. Similar site search actually finds similar websites. So if I search for Serious Eats here, I get /food, which is a food culture, food conversation website, Smitten Kitchen, which is a food blog. Like really, really cool that you're getting, you know, you kind of know what you like. I want more cool food blogs, and I want them to be like, you know, Serious Eats. So I can go here and find similar websites that, you know, isn't exactly a keyword-based search.
Yeah, it's really hard to find sites that are similar by just typing random, you know, because you don't know what keywords to search for. So this is perfect for that. Right. It does have an API, and it looks like it's super simple. All you do is point it to our URL, and you get back some JSON with some similar sites to top 20. So you could, you know, use this in your own app or something.
Yeah. So, and when search too, it tells you certain things like this site's, you know, sort of popularity as a graph, its location and language, which is English, United States. You can rate it. And then below, it'll sort of show you the site topics. And then you can, you know, if you want to like remove or add more topics to your similar site search, you can do it there. So check it out, SimilarSiteSearch.com. I think it's a really cool little web app. So if you have some news, a follow-up web app, or a geek tool you think we should look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can tweet us out. We're faceoffshow on Twitter, or you can send an email to studio@faceoffshow.com. Love to hear from you guys. We love getting feedback from our listeners, so do that and let us know. Let's get into our topic of this episode. So a while ago, it must have been 6 months or so ago, we did an episode where we talked about this company called ThoughtWorks. Periodically puts out what they call the Technology Radar.
Yeah, June 1st, episode 71, we talked about it, and this is the second installment. So we got an updated list of, you know, different technologies that should be on your radar, whether it is to adopt these technologies, techniques or tools, or it's like, you know, hold off on these. It's not quite ready. It's not prime time. You know, we went through these and it's pretty, I mean, we agree with most of them. There's some of them kind of surprised us, but for the most part, they look, I mean, it looks great.
Yeah, what's cool about this is ThoughtWorks is a pretty big company. So they go around, I think they go around, they talk to collaborators, they talk to people in their office or their clients, and they you know, ask them like, well, what are you doing? What are the things you're hearing about? What are your concerns? What are some of the things that you're interested in but apprehensive about? And then they sort of compile those into their technology radar, which is done by, they call it the ThoughtWorks Technology Advisory Council. And then they publish it, which is cool. I mean, they could keep it totally internal, have a sort of competitive advantage looking at what, you know, but they publish it, let us all look at it. And what's cool is, so they differentiate, they have these things, they'll show you like new things that are on the radar that weren't there before. And then they also tell you like if some of the items that were on the radar before, if they've increased popularity or slid back, they show you that stuff, which is super handy. Cause you can totally see, I mean, even in 6 months since the last time we talked about this, this stuff shifts a lot. It's kind of like business technology, web technology, programming type stuff. It shifts very quickly, and you have to stay on top of it.
Absolutely. So let's get into some of the new
techniques.
techniques to start with.
So I think techniques is a really cool section because this is where a lot of there's a lot of really, really cool stuff happening with programming right now. I think we're seeing kind of a renaissance in programming right now where programmers are really looking at tools to make their job better rather than just pounding out code. I think a lot of times it was just one of those things of like, just code it and make it work. Whereas I think we're seeing a lot more of this, like, let's look at it from the outside and look at, tools and techniques just like any other profession, rather, because it's computer science and programming is a fairly new profession in the grand scope of things. Construction and carpentry has been around for quite some time, but, computer programming is totally different. And I think we're kind of seeing a renaissance right now.
So we're kind of seeing database based integration is kind of going away. So is that not going away? It's just,
yeah, I think, I'm not really sure what this means. What it means for the industry, database based integration basically is, so a lot of times when you're integrating with apps, you have APIs and stuff. What they're seeing, and this is a new item on the radar, is they're seeing that people are integrating their apps basically by sharing the same database. So, let's say you have two apps that are using similar data rather than exposing it through an API. If, you're in charge of it, you just say, oh, let's just use the same database and they can sort of share it. The pitfalls of this are that, your schema has to be fairly rigid then. Your schema isn't fixed to one application. Now it's fixed to two. And before you can make schema changes, you have to, think about both apps. What's going to happen to two of them? I think that's interesting. I wouldn't have seen this coming, though. I really would have thought that with the emergence of APIs and being so easy with RESTful APIs sort of being the norm in almost all apps that you wouldn't even think of integrating via the database anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like taking it back to, because before the APIs, you would kind of used to query SQL is kind of the standard language. It's kind of a standard API language.
Yeah, I mean, I think about things like you were talking about how, a lot of companies have these old ERP systems that are on like a DBase 2 database or something, And so oftentimes to really modernize that app, you basically have to write a whole new app that just connects to that database. And you keep your ERP system still going, but your cool integration comes with sharing the database. So I would have think that would be more of an old thing. I'm surprised to see it crop up. Because you would think it seems like something that you used to do now, before API, like RESTful APIs were the norm. So it's kind of funky to see it pop up. I wasn't really ready for that.
But if you, like you said, if you have a strict schema and your database doesn't allow, garbage to go in, it's kind of acts as a decent API and it's, you're dealing directly with the database. So
yeah, that's true.
Kind of nice.
Especially, I guess, if one app is only reading and not ever pushing, really, then it's just the same as any other API, right?
Right.
Anyways, let's check out some of the other stuff. It's cool to see continuous deployment moving up from sort of the, what is it? It was in the sort of assess to companies trying to trial it a little bit more. I think that's important. It's showing sort of the acceptance of Agile, where instead of building this giant application and deploying it once, you're continuously deploying, making improvements. A lot of these things you see on the technology radar are talking about how the apps morph, the requirements change as you're writing them, which is really sort of the core of Agile. Instead of building this big system, planning to build this entire big system and then just plowing through it, you do small increments, change as the needs of the app change and as you develop them, very Agile, very flexible. And you see this kind of crop up a lot on the radar.
It has numerous benefits. Your users they're not shocked by like all this change. They see small changes here and there. They see things getting fixed, things getting updated. Looks are changing gradually instead of all of a sudden they show up and the site is like totally different. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a total redesign can, ruin a company online. People come and it's everything's gone. They've dumbed it down or they made it too complicated. So gradually changing. And then also with continuous deployment, you're basically deploying constantly. So deployment itself is less risky. Sometimes when you deploy, you're like, oh, like we did last night, we had to stay up late because we found a lot of errors. If we were deploying like all the time, maybe we wouldn't see as many of those errors all at one time.
Right, maybe
we'd see a little bug or something.
Maybe we should. I mean, it's this, since it's a lot of companies move to the trial phase, it's something to think about where I mean, right now we do very small versions, right? We do maybe, you know, like a month turnover for our new versions for our deployment. But like even with continuous deployment, you wouldn't even ever think of versions. It's just as you work on it, when you finish the feature that you're working on, you just deploy it. It's not like do a bunch of features and deploy randomly. And I think there's benefits to it. I think you're right. I think users really like it. I mean, we've seen like with Dig and stuff when they do radical UI changes. That's all but killed Dig. That and its performance issues. So I think, you know, deploying continuously definitely has its advantages. And it's not like if you look at now, people will say like, oh, Dig version 3 or Dig version whatever. If you're continuously deploying, it's just Dig. It's just Agile Task. It's not Agile Task 2. It's not Agile Task 4. It's this app that's been evolving in front of your users' eyes.
Yep. What else we got?
Any other techniques you really want to talk about? Well, you want to talk about the web as a platform. I mean, it's here.
I've been a web developer. I've never really been a GUI desktop app programmer. Mm-hmm. It's always seemed too, you know, what do you use? Do you use this library over here? Do you use this Windows one? And then how do you do cross-platform? Do you use some Java thing? The web is kind of a universal. Everybody's kind of settled or, you know, agreed upon using HTML to some degree, and the web is kind of coming together. And with like HTML5 and some, you know, even Flash and some of these newer things, you're able to watch videos online, and the web is actually a great platform. I know Google is investing heavily into it. They're making an operating system that's like all web based. They're making apps all the time, and I think it's great that it's. I mean, I've always thought of it as always kind of being here, but I guess they're saying that it is here now.
Well, I mean, yeah, it hasn't really moved, and it was there before. So, I mean, it's not. I mean, it doesn't seem to be like all of a sudden they were like, "Oh man, web is a platform." But I mean, you make a really good point. Like with the Google operating system, it's to the point of these companies are thinking of the web being the platform. It is not just a platform; it is the platform. It is your operating system is nothing but cloud apps to the web.
Yeah, the cloud is definitely helping this move forward.
The one move I also didn't notice was visualization and metrics moved up. I'm just saying Agile Task just put up public profiles where you can get some metrics on your usage. No big deal. Just saying. I'm going to throw that out there.
So we're going to have to find a visualization to add on there too.
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny though. You see this a lot. Like one of the things that we love about GitHub, we love to look at like the network impact graph, all these rich... You know, they're even not super useful, to be honest with you. They're not like ridiculously useful, but they're cool visualizations, they're just fun things that make it interesting. Like, man, we make a lot of commits Thursday night at like 10 o'clock at night, 10 or 11 p.m. What's up with that? You know, it's just fun. So,
yeah. So if we could have a little graph or something showing when we complete our tasks or when we add them, might be kind of cool.
Yeah. Let's move on to the tools. You see a lot of tools moving. A lot of the emergent tools last time are moving into the assess or trial phase and are sticking on. Some of the big ones, I think cross-mobile platforms are really important. I was looking at a couple earlier this year. It's you know, these are the sort of things where you build the app in one platform and it builds an app that works in iPhone, BlackBerry, Droid. Which is really useful because a lot of times, I mean, for a while there, it was sort of iPhone was a platform, but the Droid is here. The BlackBerry's been around for a long time. And so these cross-mobile platforms really make it so you don't have to learn just the iPhone one and the other one. I mean, that's a lot of developer time. A cross-mobile platform makes it really easy to make one app and have it work on all devices.
Absolutely. And we talked about a great one for that. Let's see, episode 91, I think.
Mm-hmm. You see the NoSQL and MongoDB, they're definitely both moving in, getting a lot of acceptance, which is great. I think, I'm not going to say that they're the end-all solution to everything. I think a lot of people in that community will say that, but I think they're important tools to recognize and may be useful for apps in the future, so you need to know them. Distributed version control got split into Mercurial and Git, so they're tracking both of them. So it's great to see that this isn't, you know, distributed version control isn't just something people are thinking of. Now they're saying, which one am I using? Some people are saying I'm using Git. Some people are saying using Mercurial. So the concept is really here to stay. Now it's just which tools are people using and which ones are going to come out ahead.
Looks like Git is slightly ahead of Mercurial, which I would agree with. I'd say it's. I hear more about Git, although I do like both of them, and yeah, I use them both.
Me too. I think the emergence of GitHub really helps that, which is another one that was new last time that definitely is moving up. They even say in the text really that if you're thinking of doing open source development, you almost really, really should consider GitHub to be your place to put it. I look at one thing we were talking about is like Subversion moved from right near the trial or the adopt line into the middle, and this is like one of the things where we're like, really? I mean, that's finally the solid technology. I mean, you and I consider Git solid technology, and I think if you're a programmer, you need to seriously look at distributed version control, because I think using centralized version control like Subversion is very silly. I cannot stand to do it anymore, and I think using a distributed version control is a tool that you need to have in your tool belt, no questions asked.
But 2 years ago, I would have said Subversion is the greatest thing ever, and if you're not using it, you're crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things I think where we're just, you know, I think some communities are ahead of other people's curve. We go to these, like, I go to the Montana Programmers Meetups, and people are so curious about Git and distributed version control. It's almost funny to see. I mean, a lot of them, I think, just now started doing any sort of source control management, which is like, wow. That was life-changing me when I learned about it 4 years ago. And a lot of these people are learning it now, and that's cool. But really, once you learn that, you need to take it to the next level and do the distributed. I think it's the way to go.
Another interesting one, Puppet is really right on the line of adoption, which is a basically a system administer a way to automate system administration.
Yeah, we
tasks.
call it system configuration management.
That's a better we term use, than I just used.
Well, I mean, I guess where I work, we use Puppet already, so it really didn't. I guess I was surprised to see it on the list now. I think it looks like a lot of companies are really looking at it. We're actually transitioning from using Puppet to Chef, but I can totally see why Chef isn't on this list, because it's rough around the edges. It's a new product. Puppet has been around, and what we've used Puppet for has been very solid. So I think it's good to see this move. And I think you're starting to see this a lot more with like the emergence of things like EC2, where basically you can spin up any number of computers, and you know, you can't individually configure and manage those, you know, 100 computers you spin up instantly. You need a configuration tool to do it for you.
Absolutely. That's probably about it for the tools.
Yeah, let's move on to the languages. Languages really aren't moving that much, nothing new, no really new languages. A lot of them are there already. You see F# moving up, which is interesting to see functional programming move into the forefront a bit more, especially since in general, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm not very versed with functional programming. For me, doing sort of what I would say is like full-fledged object-oriented programming, Ruby helps me with that, but until I did Ruby, I didn't really do full dead-on, you know, 100% object-oriented programming. So really a transition to functional is a difficult one for me mentally, but it's a lot of people, you're seeing a lot of programmers that, you know, are really looking at sort of abstract, cool tools to do it, and functional programming seems to be one that is really interesting.
Yeah, JavaScript is moving more towards a first-class language, so using it on the server and, you know, other places than just the client side. Well, you know, we see this with Node.js and some others.
Well, we see it with like our friend Rob, who is, you know, he's a computer scientist by profession. He has a BS in computer science, and you know, he talks about it a lot. He's like, I'm really exploring JavaScript right now because you have a lot more options to use it, but also it's just an interesting language with a lot of modern features that you see in modern cool languages. It for the longest time, it's kind of been the script kiddie for goofy website stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people now are realizing that, you know, looking at it, and it's hard for me to do it too, but looking at it as a language, like it's a language, how it's implemented and how it's used, just because it's slow in the browser doesn't mean you should really hold it against the language. You should hold it against that company's implementation of the language. You know, mm-hmm. if the language is cool and you can do interesting stuff with it, then maybe it's time for it to, you know, be used on the back end and whatnot. I won't anytime soon, but it's cool to see people, you know, thinking of it that way.
And I believe JavaScript, you can do functional programming in. So that might be also part of it.
Shazam. Let's move on.
The other, you know, Ruby, JRuby, C# are in there. I was kind of sad not to see any Python.
But. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting because You know, Google's really pushed a lot of Python, but the honest truth is you have really one company. And I mean, I guess you call me a Ruby fanboy or whatever you want, but I mean, I think I'm really seeing a lot of steam behind Ruby. I've seen a lot of people, especially where I work, come in and we say, you know, we're a Ruby shop, so you should probably learn Ruby. And they start learning Ruby and they start going, you know, this is pretty interesting. This is kind of a new level that I'm liking. So we'll see how that goes. I agree. I wish Python was on there as well, especially over JRuby, because JRuby's nothing that special in my opinion. But probably get some hate mail for that one.
All right, moving on to platforms. IE6, it's now time to end its life, to take it back out in the back and beat it up.
The one that's interesting to me is you're seeing a lot of the sort of cloud-based services come in. Microsoft Azure, which is is basically sort of like cloud computing and stuff for on the Microsoft platform, if I recall correctly, is moving from the hold to the assess, you know, start assessing it. What is it?
It's not quite at the same level as EC2 or S3 by right. Amazon, of course, but it is moving up there, and it's glad to see. I am a fan of Amazon. I just recently switched to it, but I am glad to see that there's some competitors, because for a while there, Amazon was kind of the only player in this cloud world.
Totally. What's some
we
of
got
the,
that moving up?
What's some of the new ones that popped up in the radar? OAuth, which is good. I think this was sort of, I think the one that really pushed this forward was Twitter switching to OAuth only authentication, getting rid of basic auth, which really sort of pushed that forward.
Azure, we talked about mobile web, the Google App Engine, that one's still kind of in there. It still has assess. It was there last time.
The iPad, obviously, you know, catapulted forward in popularity.
Yeah, I think Apple made the right move sticking with the same OS for that. All the apps were, you know, you can now develop for two platforms
totally
with using the same API and everything.
Android into the adopt, which makes me really happy. I think competition on that platform level is really important and very useful.
To put that one on the same scale as iPhone really shows a lot for Android and shows how fast they're moving towards adoption. IE8 is still on hold, which is kind of sad since IE9 is coming out eventually.
Facebook as a business platform moved into the trial. I'm still sketchy on this. I'm going to say I wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't ever think about doing it as a pure business. I would not put my whole platform in Facebook. You couldn't pay me enough money to do it right now, but a lot of people doing it right now. It's pretty popular.
Might be nice for a supplement, you know, like a Twitter account for your business, but yeah, I wouldn't.
A new one that's on there in the adopt phase is KVM, which is used for virtualization. We use it a lot at work. Super handy. Glad to see you. I'm glad to see virtualization becoming popular as well. Server virtualization.
So is that different from Xen? Are they?
Yeah, I think they're two different competing virtualization platforms. KVM, if I recall correctly, is the one that was adopted by the Linux kernel. It's gaining a lot of steam. What's another? OpenVZ is another one, but again, like that one's not, you know, losing popularity. I think KVM is pretty popular.
So I wonder what Amazon uses.
I don't know. What operating systems do they offer?
They offer Linux and Windows.
Then they must be using KVM, because you can't use OpenVZ for anything but Linux. KVM, you can do full virtualization and do Windows on it. So I would assume it's either KVM or their own. It could be like their own like VMware or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but I like KVM because it's open source. So that's cool. Check it out. The link to the whole radar article is in the show notes. Check it out. Read it out, or check not read it out. Check it out. Read it. Take a look at it. It's really cool to see this company do this, release it. You know, especially, you know, like for us, I mean, we get the pulse from the internet kind of, but it's cool that they go out to like companies and assess it. And really, this is how they're pretty, you know, forward thinking, innovative, big company. They're using this as their own internal assessment as to which direction they want to move in.
Well, and sometimes, you know, we get a little too excited about a certain technology, and this kind of helps put ourselves in our places and
cool your jets.
Cool our jets, you know, give us a little time out and think about, you know, adopting the next coolest thing, because it might not be. It might start moving out.
Totally.
Might be too risky.
That's a good note to end it on. So that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you, you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. If you want to do it, you can subscribe via email or RSS, whatever you want. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Tweet us out, send us an email, talk to us on Facebook. Love to hear from you guys. Thank you for listening to the show, and we will see you guys next week.